From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Everybody, and welcome to week one of Rock Month at the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I am Hunter von Frankenstein, and with me down in Australia is Stuart Danzig. Say hello, Stuart.
Hey, I don't know if I'm Elvis, Jim Morrison, or Johnny Cash.
Maybe Ian Astbury.
And him too.
And joining me also is John Only in Denver. Say hello, John.
Hello. We'll send whores to your house.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, you need to be smacking gum to be sufficiently.
Yeah. That's a totally obscure reference if you've got the old Misfits live video from like 82 when they run some like a Cincinnati, Ohio cable access show. That tape went out everywhere, and Dan's like, yeah, we sent whores to your house.
So if you haven't guessed, week one of Rock Month, we're doing the Misfits, the recently reunited Misfits, the godfathers of horror punk, the punk band that brought B-movies and horror to punk rock.
They're basically and, the band that helped spawn Rob Zombie, so I kind of disliked them for that reason.
All that, yeah. Basically, there would be no Rob Zombie without the Misfits. There would be no, let's see.
Yeah.
Who's not obscure? There would be no Hatebreed without the Misfits because obviously they're named after hate breeders.
Or what about the, what do they call the rockabilly guys who are all into horror billy or something?
Oh, like what's his name? Unknown Henson.
There's a group I've seen a couple of times. They're like from. They're from like Denmark. They're like the Coffin.
Well,
something.
I think Volbeat's very Misfits influenced. They even covered Angel Fuck. And Metallica covered them. You know, Metallica's the reason the Misfits are famous, but you know.
Right. I'm sure Turbo Negro has some Misfits influence.
Oh, yeah.
So, no, definitely.
Yeah, it's there.
But yeah, the Misfits. So the Misfits they're one of my favorite bands. And, you know, we just sort of, they're Stuart's pick, but we're kind of, it was almost like a collective pick by osmosis in a way.
Yeah.
Because they're a favorite of all of us. So, how did you get into the Misfits, Stuart? We'll start with you since they're yours.
The Metallica EP as well. Guilty as charged. I wish I had known about them earlier, but nah, they were too obscured, you know, over this neck of the woods to, have reached over here, so...
Yeah, if you weren't getting, like, shit in the mail from Glenn Danzig, you didn't know about the Misfits.
No, pretty much. I mean, if you lived around the New Jersey, the New York area, you'd have a much better chance of seeing them. I mean, what bugs me, real sort of off off topic here for a sec about Henry Rollins. He mentioned that Misfits only ever played on Halloween. I'm sorry, Henry. They played lots of times besides just Halloween, live. So what? I don't know what the. I want to go on about Rollins. I'll talk about him later. Getting back to what I was saying. Yeah, via the Metallic EP, I picked it up when it came out because it was like $5.98, whatever. And I was like, the hell is this Green Hell song? It's like, I like it, but then didn't really get much else besides that until the mid-90s. I picked up on vinyl, mind you, the Collection 1, Collection 2, when that came out. I got that on a red vinyl. Evil Live, Legacy of Brutality, like a massive haul in one day. And then, of course, when the box set came out after that, well, that was it. Oh, I got to see him live in 98.
And that would have been the Michael Graves lineup.
It was, on the American Psycho tour where when I jumped on stage and Doyle fucking elbowed me right in the side of the head. I'm like, oh, God. And the sad thing is, actually, it's on video. Somebody's filmed it. So if you see...
Oh, you have to put that in the show notes.
I don't know if I have it. I don't think I do. But you will see, if it's on there, you'll see during the first... I think it's during the first track, American Psycho, after the intro of Abominable Dr. Fibes. You will see a guy jump up with a T-shirt with a painted-on rib cage and a skull mask. Yeah, that is me under the skull mask. I get elbowed in the head by a doll and I just fall like a sack of potatoes. And
he's a big dude. I've stood next to him. He's a huge guy.
But seriously, like, okay, I shouldn't have been on stage, but he was like about an inch or two from hitting the fucking temple. I could have just gone dead, dropped dead.
They had problems in the U.S. with guys jumping on stage, and in Canada, jumping on stage and punching Michael Graves.
Wow.
Yeah, it was dancing on stage. I also had no intention of punching at Michael Graves. It was like...
When I saw the Misfits, I saw it with the Jerry, Des Cadena, and Robo lineup. And
the pseudo fits, yeah.
It was a fun show. But and plus, they played a lot of Black Flag songs with Des singing, so that was cool.
Yeah.
It's basically half of Black Flag right there. There would be people who would get up on stage and they would shove Jerry, and Jerry would... Jerry Only's fucking huge. And he would grab them and like by the collar of their shirt and throw them off the stage. And I remember one thing that I thought was hilarious was this girl jumped up on stage and she grabbed Dez's mic and started singing. And she was acting, she was like, well, I'm a girl. Jerry's not going to do anything. Jerry ran over, picked her up, and tossed her into the crowd.
Oh my goodness.
But like there was a guy who kept jumping up on stage and shoving Jerry. Like he kept jumping up. He would run over and shove Jerry and then jump back into the crowd. Like he would he kept doing that. And then at one point, Jerry spotted him getting up on stage and Jerry ran over and kicked him in the face.
Oh Jesus.
So it was a pretty intense show, like just in terms of the violence. Like my friend Jake, who I went to school with in college, he's from the Dallas area, and I like ran into him at the show, and like after the show he came out and his like face was covered in blood. He was like, that was an awesome show, man. And I was like, Jake, you've got blood on your face. He's like, yeah.
But the thing that I don't get is all three members of that band at the time would have been used to crowd jumping on stage. Black Flag, they're all used to it. So
I don't know. I think it's probably just you don't like people touching you. So
I think that tour was particularly stress-filled. I think there was something going on there.
I think John might be right, yeah, because... I've seen plenty of live videos of the Misfits, and yeah, there's quite a few people on stage at one time, and
they kept jumping on stage. It was at the Granada Theater, right down the street from where I live, and people kept getting on stage, people kept jumping up there, and you know, the Misfits were their own security at the show.
I mean, the worst one I ever saw on home video was the Dead Kennedys live in 84 or something like that, and these aren't home video, like Target Video put it out, and it's just a sea of people everywhere on stage. You can't see, Jello Biafra, or you can't see that little midget No, the class fluoride on stage. It's just for people everywhere. So, I get my point is those guys would be used to it. So, yeah.
But so, how did you get into the Misfits, John?
In 1990, a friend of mine bought Walk Among Us on either CD or cassette, and I think I made a copy and listened to that a lot. And you know, at that time, it was actually you couldn't get much of their stuff on CD, and it was really overpriced. And they were distributed by Caroline, which just price gouged everything except for Walk Among Us. That was like a Rhino release under like Ruby Records or something. Yeah. And
I think it was Slash, wasn't it? Or
yeah, I think it was Slash. It was Slash, but that's Rhino. Eventually, Rhino I think absorbed them.
Yeah.
I mean, Rhino was on the label back then. And then I bought Legacy of Brutality on CD and listened to that a ton, and then eventually got the collections, and then the box set came out and made pretty much everything irrelevant that had been available.
Yeah, pretty much.
At that time, except for Walk Among Us. And, you know, I knew about them because that skull was in a lot of the heavy metal magazines for the, you know, in the 80s. You would see there was Misfits t-shirts and Misfits stickers were real big, especially with like skaters and stuff.
Even if nobody
had heard their music.
Well, and even in the movie Howard the Duck, Leah Thompson has a Misfit sticker on her guitar case.
Yeah, they were everywhere. It was almost like that Andre has a posse, Andre the Giant sticker thing. Yeah. You know, me being a famous Monsters kid, I was like, why is the Crimson Skull? Why is everybody have these stickers of the Crimson Skull? And because I'm thinking of the movie serial from Republic. I didn't hear their music till like 1990. They weren't, even if somebody like Night Flight, a show like that would show punk videos, there was no Misfits videos to show.
No, there was nothing.
They were that obscure. Well, they were sort of like a word of mouth legend. And you know, even if you bought those CDs, there were the one photo of the band was impossible to see on the Walk Among Us cover. Like there was no, you didn't know anything about them. It was completely mysterious.
Well, like they made one music video, but it was like a VHS thing you would get in the mail.
Right. They were very much a mail order word of mouth group. And my understanding is they were only popular as a live act, like in Jersey, of course, and in Cincinnati. They had like a huge following in Ohio for some reason. They always drew large crowds, but it was very word of mouth, and they were not terribly. They didn't tour a lot. I don't think they toured all the time, and I think that's one of the problems Glenn Danzig had with Jerry Only, and is Danzig didn't like to tour, and Jerry Only wanted to, and so we need to get out. You know,
Jerry Only was more into. Jerry Only, I mean, he was a football player in high school and like very much a guy who likes a crowd. And Danzig is not.
Well, he likes a crowd. Yeah, he likes a crowd so he can punch him in the head and throw him off stage.
Well, yeah,
Danzig was training to be an opera singer, from what I understand. Like he was training to be an opera singer when he was in high school. And so he was trying to get into that very serious type of music, you know. And I heard Danzig got picked on a lot when he in high school. Like,
yeah, he did. He's a short guy.
When he went to the same high school as the Gore Gazette editor Rick Sullivan and the promoter of Chillicon, Kevin Clement, I think is his name. Mm-hmm. And they had said that he was kind of like this nerd that got picked on a lot. Like he wasn't like a tough guy or anything.
And it was kind of weird that like the star football player from Lodi, because they're from Lodi, New Jersey. And Danzig were in this band together because you had the nerd and the football king, you know, in the band together. And but Jerry was really like, he just seemed like a guy who really liked attention. Like you look at him during the Static Age era, the first album we're about to talk about, and this was before they refined their look, and he's got like shock blue hair. He's kind of got the Sid Vicious look. Like he's, you know, they're all wearing leather jackets with no shirt on underneath. Like, you know.
Jerry Only was well known in the New York punk scene, supposedly, like as the blue haired guy who was yelling at Sid Vicious, would heckle Sid Vicious when he was playing live at the clubs in New York.
Wasn't he in the same room as Sid Vicious when he OD'd that night and died? Jerry Only? I'm sure I saw you know, there's one of those final 48.
I haven't heard that story, but I do know that he was part of the pack of fans that would follow Sid Vicious around New York, supposedly.
Well, so I'll talk for a minute about how I got into the Misfits. I got into them much later. I got into Metallica, and like Stu, I got into them because of Metallica. I picked up the Garage Inc. record which was well after the EP. This was like the Garage Inc., which had the new cover of Die, Die, My Darling, plus the old EP that had Green Hell and Last Caress. And I remember hearing Last Caress and thinking it was so shocking, hearing James Hetfield say, like, I've got something to say. I killed your baby today.
Yeah.
And I raped your mother today and all that stuff, and thinking, what the fuck is this? And I looked and it was a Misfits cover. And I was like, he covered all these songs by the band The Misfits. And this was right when Napster started. So,
really?
And I got on Napster, and I didn't use Napster that much. This was maybe the first time, the first and last time I used Napster. I got on Napster and I went, I'll search for The Misfits. And I searched for The Misfits and I found some stuff. I searched for the ones the Metallica covered, and I listened to those. But the internet I had was so slow that it just was impractical to look for. It was like 14.4 modem, you know. And it was just like I just downloaded those songs, and that was it. And then I went to the store, and I was like, I'm going to look for a Misfits CD. But I saw stuff like Famous Monsters, and I saw the new fits. Yeah, I saw the new fits, you know. And I didn't know what album to get. And back then, you know, you had to have, you know, I had enough money to get one album, and it had to be a sure thing, you know.
Yeah.
It had to be something I knew I wanted. So I looked at the Misfits, and I was like, I don't know what to get. And I looked at the Famous Monsters album, and it didn't have the stuff Metallica covered. So I went, okay, well, I don't know about this, you know. And then I stopped thinking about them for a while. And then when I was in college at Rhodes, we had like our iTunes libraries, but you could share them over the network, and you could look at anybody's music on iTunes if you shared it on the network. And so I shared mine. Mine was called Hunter's Music Isn't Cool. And it's so funny. I would meet people all the time at Rhodes, and they would go, Hunter, are you Hunter's Music Isn't Cool? And I would go, yes. I love your stuff. But you could download people's music off of there, and I found someone who had the Misfits collections, and so I downloaded Misfits Collection 1, and I went, oh, the Misfits, I knew about these people, and I downloaded it, and I went insane for it, and I bought like all the CDs, I bought everything, like I bought Collection 1 and 2, and then you know, Walk Among Us and Static Age and Legacy of Brutality and Evil Live. I remember buying Earth AD was kind of painful, because if you own Collection 1 and 2, you own Earth AD, because it's kind of split on there. And then I got into the Michael Graves stuff and blah, blah, blah. But I became a super misfit. And then I got into Danzig solo and Samhain, which, you know, finding those Samhain CDs was like hunting for Bigfoot. But
you know, it's funny. When I was into the Misfits in 1990, I also got into Danzig and Samhain, or Samhain, whatever you want to call them.
So it's and it's, I think, the proper
Samhain or whatever.
But I just call Samhain because
everybody calls them Samhain because they have no idea how to spell it if we say it. But they were actually really easy to find in like 1990.
Yeah, because
the CDs. I bought Initium or whatever. The one is where they basically just look like the Misfits on the back cover.
Yeah, it looks like the Misfits, but they're covered in blood and
I freaked out a friend of mine. My friend was real big and jumping on trends, like he was buying the Pearl Jam and the Soundgarden and that sort of stuff. And I bought, and one day I remember this specifically. I had like $40 to spend at Disc Jockey, or the overpriced record store we had, or maybe it might have been Camelot Music, and I bought Little Richard live at the Hollywood Bowl, like in the 1960s. I bought Misfits Legacy of Brutality, and I bought Samhain Initium, and your friend thought I was insane.
I hope you, hung on to Initium, because that goes for a megabucks now. That first
really pressing. The CD?
I think it's been reissued.
Yeah, but that first really? Pressing, yeah. I don't know.
God, I traded it. I think I traded that in because I ended up with the box set, so I didn't really need the CD anymore.
Well, it's funny. Speaking of Samhain, you know Mike McCarthy, the guy who did like Super Starlet AD and Sore Losers and all that stuff?
The filmmaker.
Yeah.
Like Samhain was in Memphis playing, and Mike had his comic book Damn Zelvis, Daughter of Helvis, and he went to show it to Danzig, Mm-hmm. And he knocked on the door of the van they had, and Danzig opened the door and he goes, "What?" And he goes, "I wanted to show you this comic book," and he held it up and Danzig goes, "Already got it," and slammed the door. And he goes, "No, wait, I wrote it." And Danzig opened it up and he goes, "Oh, why don't you say so? Come on in."
"Come on in, now I'm going to punch you out." That's what Mike should have said.
He said that was the time he hung out with Danzig. But
who was that guy who punched out Danzig? That famous
video? Was the guy from the Northside Kings. Yeah. That Danzig's never going to live that down. Like that and the French onion soup incident were two.
What the hell was a French onion soup? I don't know.
Danzig was playing at Fun Fest, and he was scheduled to play, and he canceled at the last minute. And Fun Fest put this post up on Facebook saying that Danzig demanded French onion soup and we couldn't get it to him. And so he like stormed out. So like it became this thing. It was like the social media battle.
Has there been mock-up packets of French onion soup with his head on it? It should be.
French onion. I don't know. How can you incorporate woe into that?
Get like a Campbell's soup can, but with the Danzig font. And stick his head on the can.
But yeah, he really that was another incident that was bad PR. Bad PR. So
French.
That was like it was on his rider or something. But I'm kind of like, if it's on your rider, you should fucking get it to him. You know
what, John? When you go to that Telluride festival, you should have I'll appear if I can get some French onion soup. That's one of the requirements of the MMC. You got to have French onion soup there for me.
French onion soup and M&Ms with no brown M&Ms.
Really, the Van Halen rider.
And I also hear there's an Eddie Griffith rider where if Eddie Griffith plays a comedy club, he demands that you have to go out and buy this super expensive pair of Nikes or basketball shoes. And they always have the shoes in the dressing room, and he leaves them every time.
Man, what an idiot.
I know, but it's almost like he's just making sure they read the contract.
So they're reading the right. Okay, gotcha. Right.
David Lee Roth said they only did the brown M&Ms thing because they just wanted to make sure they were actually reading the contract.
Yeah.
God.
But so let's get into the records.
Yeah.
Okay.
So first album we were going to look at is Static Age, mm-hmm. which is the first record the Misfits recorded in 1978, but it was not released until 1996.
Yep.
Songs from it found their way out in various forms, but this album as a whole did not come out until 96 in a box set, 97 by itself. Mm. It's produced by Dave Akelis and Tom Bajerkowitz. I think I'm saying that right. Probably not. It features Danzig on vocals, Jerry Only on bass, Franche Coma on guitar, and Mr. Jim on drums. And the track listing is Static Age, TV Casualty, Some Kind of Hate, Last Caress, Return of the Fly, Hybrid Moments, We Are 138, Teenagers from Mars, Come Back, Angel Fuck, Hollywood Babylon, Attitude, Bullet, Theme for a Jackal, She, Spinal Remains, and In the Doorway. And there's some various outtakes and stuff if you buy the CD that you can hear like Jerry goofing off in the studio and stuff. Mm. But yeah, that's their first record, although it was not properly released until later. And the cover kind of has them covering their eyes. They don't have the devil locks yet. It's very like standard punk look. It's not like they don't have the Misfits look down yet on this one.
No.
So what do you guys think of this record? When did you first hear it? What's your thoughts on it, Stu?
First heard it in the box set. Not complete compared to the version you just read out. Mine came all the way up to Theme for a Jackal, which is track 14.
Yeah, because I think the standalone had
three bonus tracks.
It had in the doorway.
In the Doorway was like when I got Static Age, it said In the Doorway was like the brand new crown jewel, I think it said, of the standalone recording.
Yeah. And even all those tracks of that 17 tracks still runs just a mere 35 minutes. So but it's my favorite of a lot. I first heard it via the box set, then I got the standalone the following year when it came out, basically for In the Doorway, which is Geez, probably my favorite on the album.
It's a great song. Like, it's one of those ones. It's like, God,
where was this hiding all this time? You know, it's. I'd say my favorite tracks in this, In a Doorway and Theme for a Jackal. I mean, I love every track. Don't get me wrong, love every track. Comeback's a little long for the Misfit standards, 5 minutes. But
I do kind of like how Comeback is sort of. It's like five times as long as other songs.
Yeah, really.
But it's. I love Danzig's vocals on it because it just keeps going and going, you know.
It's also a steady pace bridge between Teenagers from Mars and Angel Fuck, which are faster.
Yeah.
So he used the Alice Cooper philosophy of fast song, slow song, fast song when they sequence that.
That's a Venom had that that idea as well, to fast slow on their albums.
Right, right. Because back then they would always think of an album as an experience, whereas nowadays it's just. Well, yeah. I don't know what an album's like nowadays. It's a collection of singles, basically.
Albums these days are like 80 minutes long, which is ridiculous.
Just go on forever.
Yeah. And like with this song, you have like kind of some standard punk stuff, Static Age, TV Casualty, kind of TV songs. But then you get into like horror stuff with Return of the Fly, Teenagers from Mars.
Yeah, they were very Generation X inspired by the Billy Idol group.
Yeah.
And like early stuff like Cough Cool, that single had me thinking they were probably really into Suicide, that group, which was just two guys and a synthesizer, I think.
Yeah, because like the first single the Misfits did, it didn't even have Jerry. It was like Danzig and this girl, and like they played Cough Cool.
Right, it was Suicide inspired.
Very keyboard heavy as well.
Yeah. You know, if you listen to Collection 2, it has Cough Cool, but it's not the version that he originally.
You need the box set to get that
one. The box set has it, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, and if you check out the group Suicide, they were also an inspiration on the Ramones because of the simplicity, and they were kind of a weird act in New York in the early 70s. Rollins covered their song Ghost Rider for the Crow soundtrack.
Well, and people forget Billy Idol was a punk rocker before he was, you know, the Raise the Fist.
Yeah, he was like, Generation X was like a really exciting. I think if the Clash hadn't made it big in the U.S., Generation X would have made it big.
True.
They had that commercial sound, and they did the kind of the chants and stuff. It was just they were huge inspiration. I mean, you can look at photos of the Misfits and tell they were looking at photos of Billy Idol and Generation X and going, okay. That's the look we want.
I just got that Billy Idol book as well the other day. I can't wait to dive into it after the Lita Ford one I'm reading at the moment.
I read it a few years ago. It's all right.
But I also like, but it's also clearly inspired by like horror movie soundtracks. Like Teenagers from Mars sounds like a horror theme, like bomb, bomb, ba-na-na-na-na.
Yeah, they were huge, huge monster movie fans. And that's not really, there's a difference between horror movie fandom and monster movie fandom.
Monster movie fandom is totally different. Like,
monster movie fandom was the dominant fandom in the 60s and 70s because of the monster boom of the early 60s.
Famous
and you monsters, had,
you know?
Famous Monsters Magazine. You had Universal Shock Theater syndication packages on television showing all the old Frankenstein and Dracula films. And you had the culture was like really crazy about monsters for a few years, and Addams Family Monsters. Look at the Saturday morning cartoons. There was the Groovy Ghoulies. So there was this kind of, it was a monster thing. It wasn't horror. Horror. Nobody called them horror films back then.
They wrote a love letter to Vampire on one of their songs.
Right, right. And it's like later they became horror films in the 80s because slasher films took over the genre for a couple of years, and there were no monster movies for a while. So. And even now, you know, they make a monster movie. It's just some CGI crap. People don't understand that back then, if it was the guy in a suit or Boris Karloff, it was just it started a cult. It inspired fandom, you know. Yeah. And you had the model kits and comic books and just everything. It was a lot of tie-in product. You know, even when I was a kid in the 70s, I remember all that stuff. Like, I was a monster kid for sure.
I got to say, though, the actual pacing of this album, the speed they're playing, I should say, compared to Earth AD, which we'll get into later, this is my favorite pace of Misfits, the way they play. You know, they don't have to play blinding fast like they did later on. It's, you know, like
I
said,
I wish they had stuck with they should have stuck with this style.
Yeah, really.
I think it's a perfect record. Like, there's not a bad song on it. Like,
skips. Like, there's no, like, yep, skip. You know, there's none of that on there.
Like, you know, and like, you have like really shocking songs like Bullet, which, you know, like, we'll get into Who Killed Marilyn later, but it's almost like Danzig's anger at the Kennedy, at JFK, because he got to fuck Marilyn Monroe and he didn't. But,
yeah, like, masturbating to Jackie Kennedy as well.
Yeah, like jerking. It's like the lyrics are like jerking off on Jackie's face, you know. Yeah. And you got She, which is about Patty Hearst. You got some horror movie stuff like Return of the Fly, Teenagers from Mars, but like I feel like a lot of the songs, like I love how Danzig kind of does this classical doo-wop stuff, but with like hideous subject matter.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like
he was way ahead of the curve on that.
Yes, he was.
No, even other punk bands at this time were not this offensive or this hilarious.
And here's the thing too is that Danzig was it was a punk band with a singer.
Yeah,
like most punk bands, you know, they had guys like Keith Morris or Henry Rollins who were more personality, and Danzig was a guy who could actually sing. The Damned had a guy who could actually play guitar and sing, of course, you know, nothing to take away from Dave Vanian, but Danzig like had a really great voice and he applied it to punk music.
Yeah.
True.
Because he was training for opera.
Yeah.
Who do you think his biggest influence vocally is? I mean, we make fun of him, you know, Johnny Cash and Elvis and all that.
I've
heard Roy Orbison as well. He's a big influence.
I was thinking about Roy Orbison when I was listening to him today.
Mm.
I was thinking Jim Morrison.
Yeah, it's Jim Morrison, Roy Orbison, like all the, like I think a lot of the Sun Studio stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Orion.
you can tell he likes rockabilly. You can tell he likes rockabilly and doo-wop and a lot of classic rock and, you know, real classic rock from the 50s and early 60s. He likes that stuff, girl groups. I think he's actually admitted, like, big fan of Shangri-Las. So there's a lot more inspiration there than you probably have with the average punk band that probably just heard Ramones record and said, okay, I'm going to – heard Black Oak Arkansas if they were in California and, you know, kind of imitated that style.
So, Stu, what do you give Static Age?
Oh, 10. I can't give 10. It nothing less than 10.
Fuck yeah. John?
10.
10 for me as well.
And I will say, I love at the very end of TV Casual how they have a guy flipping through channels and it finishes off with the I Love Lucy thing.
Yeah, brilliant. That
was very funny, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was everywhere in America. Wherever you lived, I Love Lucy was playing on TV every day.
And now it would be we're all glued to iPhone tubes or something.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
But, okay, so another album that this one actually was never properly released, 12 Hits from Hell.
Yeah.
Recorded in 1980. It was going to be released in 2001. A few promo copies made it out, but the release was canceled because Jerry and Danzig put the kibosh on it. Something, one of the few things they agreed on. It's produced by Tom Bjerkowitz. I think he worked on the last one too. And it has Glenn Danzig on vocals, Jerry only on bass guitar. Now, the rest of the band has been replaced. Because, you know, hard to find dependable people when you're playing punk rock. We have Bobby Steele on guitar, who would become the band's nemesis. Mm-hmm. We have Doyle. I think he's credited, you know, you see Doyle Wolfgang von Frankenstein, but that name didn't get used till later. He was just Doyle.
He was Doyle in his era of the Danzig.
Yeah, and he was just Doyle. And Arthur Googie on drums. And I think on this release, it says Robbie Alter played guitar in London Dungeon and Violent World. So, you know, the band had a revolving lineup at that point. And Bobby Steele was their guitar player for a while. And they had him and Doyle on this record. Doyle eventually – Bobby was kicked out. Doyle became their permanent guitar player, who was Jerry's brother, should be noted.
Yes. Younger brother.
So this is an album that is not widely heard. I got a bootleg of it, of course. Because the CD of it goes for big bucks. And, you know, a lot of the songs on it, the track listing, I should say. Halloween, Vampira, I Turned Into a Martian, Skulls, London Dungeon, Night of the Living Dead, Horror Hotel, Ghouls Night Out, Astro Zombies, Where Eagles Dare, Violent World, Halloween 2, and an alternate take of London Dungeon. So we're going much more horror themed on the songs. They've got the devil locks, they've got the hair in front of their face, the eye makeup, and, you know, a lot of these songs on here would come out in various other incarnations.
That's that's one thing you're gonna find throughout the course of this episode. Lots of overlap. You're gonna say, didn't you guys just say that song before? You're gonna hear that a lot.
I'm gonna list songs off, and you guys are gonna go, "What the fuck?" You know, like when we talk about Walk Among Us, there's a lot of stuff on Walk Among Us that's on here. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff on Static Age that's on Legacy of Brutality.
Yep.
So that's a good thing to note, Stu. Mm. So what do you all think of 12 Hits from Hell, Stuart?
Love it. Love it.
It's absolute greatness. I this is one of my most listened to Misfits records.
If I got a gripe, it's like London Dungeon, the alternative take doesn't need to be there.
It doesn't. It's one of those.
Nothing, you know. It's
yeah, it's the thing, but I just listen to Halloween 2 and turn it off, you know. That's how. John, what do you think?
I heard it for the first time this morning, actually. So I thought it was really good. But I've been hearing those songs for the last 25 years. So it was
it doesn't seem that that different. I will say that the production's a lot cleaner.
Yeah, I was gonna say that the production is better. You can hear Danzig's lyrics instead of a lot of the recordings on other albums sound kind of muffled.
Well, and Danzig loves doing that. Like, he loves kind of burying his voice in production, which I don't get why. Like, Rick Rubin, when Danzig went solo, one of the things Rick Rubin did was, like, we're going to put your voice front and center because it's really good. Danzig always insisted on burying his voice. Like, when he and Rick broke off after Danzig 4, Danzig started burying his voice in the production again. And even if you listen to, like, his new covers record, Skeletons, it's very muddy sounding. Like, that's just the way he likes recording himself. Ugh. He doesn't like he's got a great voice, but he doesn't – he has low self-esteem about it or something. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, he's definitely got that.
I think the one album that's projected Danzig's voice the most is Danzig 2.
Definitely.
Which is his best solo record.
Yeah, yes, it is.
Absolutely.
Great record.
Absolutely. I've said for a long time, Danzig's solo albums are like Star Trek movies. The even numbered ones are good. The odds are not so great.
Yeah,
it's the production's very clean, and that's one reason I like it is because you can hear everything, and it's very crisp sounding. I mean, and I like some of the sort of more punk production on like Walk Among Us and stuff, and you know Static Age, but right. I really think. You can kind of hear Danzig's talent a little more on this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they were a better band than anybody would give them credit for, but they never had the career that a band that good should have had.
Right.
Because if you look at the competition at the time, Foreigner was the biggest hard rock band around. You know, so these guys were just not going to get signed to a record label with a kind of horror Kiss image, you know. They were just not going to get signed to any majors.
I remember Danzig saying, like, every door I knocked on slammed in my face, so I just, like, built my own.
And the irony is this music has aged a lot better than most of what was here.
Oh, yeah. It's timeless. I think it's aged better than a lot of Danzig's music.
You may laugh, but honestly, if you put this up, like, any Misfits album up against Danzig 1, that has aged badly, that album. It's...
Yeah, Danzig one is it's. I don't listen to it that much.
I haven't listened to it in years. I think I listened to Danzig 2 like 10 years ago for the last time. So
I mean, you know. I like Twist of Cain.
It's got the James. Oh no, was it? It was James Hetfield. Yeah, he's doing backing vocals on that and Possession.
I like Possession with all the back masking.
I'm old. That's all like Sam Hain stuff too.
Yeah. Thank God that was not labeled as Sam Hain because I'm a massive fan of Sam Hain. And
well, those songs are on Sam Hain Final Descent, but
not the one I'm on, not my version. I got the first version when it came out.
I've got a Sam Hain. Okay, because the version I had of Final Descent had Possession and. I think Twist of Cain. I could be wrong.
No, Twist
of Cain is.
It's the Dictators.
Yeah, it's Minnesota Strip.
Bow. Girls on the Minnesota Strip. Yeah.
But no, the Final Descent you have is the reissue. I have the first Play 9 one with the first six tracks and the last five are the that EP. What's it called?
Unholy Passion.
Unholy Passion. Thank you. Yeah, that's the one. with with Misery Tomb, the stupidest song in history, which is just Danzig.
Actually, even the cover is fucking awful. Like that demon chick with the giant bush, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, massive Samhain fan. But anyway.
All right. So, 12 Hits from Hell. What do you give it, Stu?
Nine.
Nine?
Nine. Yes.
John.
I give it a nine, and that's just based on one listen.
I give it a 10. I think it's, you know, not a bad cut. I know London Dungeon doesn't, the alternate take doesn't need to be there, which on London Dungeon, it's pretty much a heavy metal song. It's not even a punk song.
It is. Oh. Well, you know, it's about them going to, Danzig got locked up
in
a London jail for a bar fight because they were opening for the Damned on tour or something. So
we'll talk more about the Damned later. But yeah, I give it a 10 just because it's my go-to Misfits for me.
So which one would you prefer, this one or Static Age? If someone said, Hunter, what's your favorite Misfits album? Is it?
It's hard to pick.
I know, it is, like, isn't it?
Because they both have totally different songs. So I can't really pick between them because I listen to both.
Yeah.
You know? But it's because neither of them, I don't think one's inferior to the other. So the next record, this was the first official released Misfits record. 1982, Walk Among Us. Produced by the Misfits, featuring Glenn Danzig on vocals, Jerry on guitar, on bass, sorry, Jerry only on bass, Doyle on guitar, and Arthur Googie on drums. So it's just, you know, we just don't have as many different guitar players as we did on the last one.
Yeah.
And the track listing is 20 Eyes, I Turned Into a Martian, All Hell Breaks Loose, Vampyra, Nike a Go-Go, Hate Breeders, Mommy Can I Go Out and Kill Tonight, live version, Night of the Living Dead, Skulls, Violent World, Devil's Whorehouse, Astro Zombies, and Brain Eaters, which is the only music video they made.
Yep.
And this was the first full-length record they released during their career as a band, during the Danzig era. Great album cover. I will say it's one of my favorite album covers.
It's fantastic.
It's got, what's that spider monster from with the wolf face?
It's from Angry Red Planet.
Angry Red Planet, yeah.
We used to call it the Rat Bat Spider in the Monster Kid scene.
And it's got the Misfits on the cover. I love Danzig's like skull and crossbone shirt. But I this is the only Misfits record I have on vinyl, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's because it's pretty easy to find. You know, you just go into a record store and there it is, and it's got the pink cover. When I bought it on CD, it had the purple cover. But this is kind of one of the classic Misfits records because it was, you know, the one that they put out while they were there. Yeah. Stu, what do you think?
I don't like it.
What?
I don't like it. I don't like the sound. I don't like the versions on this album.
And so you don't like the production?
No, not at all. I think it's crap.
So you don't like the Mommy, Can I Go Out and Kill Tonight live version?
I think it's an absolute abomination.
I love the studio version. I just wish
they had never put that on there and put the studio one instead.
Oh, I like the live Mommy, Can I Go Out and Kill Tonight more than the one on Earth AD because Danzig sounds like he's about to murder people in the crowd. It's awesome. Like, he's like going nuts. It's awesome.
Yeah. I don't like the version of Vampyra on here. 20 Eyes is perfectly fine. Violent World, okay. Devil's Whorehouse is okay.
Wolverines in dark brown suits.
Yeah, I just heard it again, and I'm probably about 3 days back, and I'm like, I just don't like the versions on here.
You prefer the other versions of these songs?
But oh yeah, the ones that are on like the collection.
Well, what about the ones that are on other songs? I mean, what about the ones that aren't on? So me, it's like you. Well, so you
basically,
like
they're all on the apart from Violent World and 20 Eyes. Basically, all the rest are on the collections one and two.
Oh, you're talking about the collection. Okay, so we're not talking about 12 Hits. Okay,
no. I mean, even up against the ones on 12 Hits, they just don't stand up. I don't think no at all. And like massively disappointing. Of course, I'd heard it numerous times before in the past, but having to sit down and literally listen to album after album after album, it's like, geez, this just doesn't hold up for me, unfortunately.
John, what do you think?
I like it. It's one of the first punk albums I got into. It was like 1990, mm-hmm. You know, having it on CD and just like listening to it repeatedly. It was one of the early ones, so I've always had a fondness for it. Yeah, compared to some of the other versions that have been released of these songs, it's inferior, and it's the result of that type of recording in Los Angeles and outside of their zone, I think.
Yeah.
And also early 80s, I really don't think people knew how to record this stuff, you know, like punk music and stuff. Yeah. A lot of albums are badly recorded from that era, particularly out of California. So, I mean, listen to some of the Black Flag stuff. It's atrociously recorded.
Yeah.
So, and I think they just didn't know how to record and mix this stuff back then. But, I mean, I like the album though. It's a nostalgic pick, but I do like it.
I like it as well. It's one, I think, like, it's one of those ones where it's so widely available. I kind of point people to it with the Misfits just because it's got a cover that grabs you.
Yeah,
the cover's fantastic,
and I think the songs are all good. And even if the production's not as good as it is on other songs, I think the songs are good. And I think even good songs can overcome bad production. And I think the "Mommy Can I Go Out and Kill Tonight" the live version that's on there is my favorite version of that song because I being a person who likes really aggressive like hardcore, I like that live like rawness that it has. You know, there's some songs I'm not crazy about. Like Nike A Go-Go has never been a favorite of mine.
Really?
You know, you know, it's not bad. You know, it's I sit through it and I go, yep, good times. But it's not one where I like sing along with.
Same with Brain Eaters. I think that's just a stupid
song. Brain Eaters is kind of – it almost feels like a novelty song.
It does. Yeah,
I love Astro Zombies.
Astro Zombies is amazing.
Because I love that crappy movie when I saw it as a kid, like in like 1981. On TV, so it's
who
like
just who directed that movie?
Ted V. Michaels.
Yes,
and, and I didn't even have to look that up. 1990, you know, just to hear a song based on a silly, cheap horror film that you figured you were the only person that ever watched it, and somebody wrote a song about it is like too big of a trip, you know. And then this is before the internet and before the oversaturation information age where you can find all sorts of people into the same weird shit that you're into. In 1990, this was a big deal.
And one thing I forgot to mention is that Danzig, he put his stuff out like on – like, you know, this was through Ruby and Slash, but his label was Plan 9 Records.
Yeah.
And Ed Wood seemed to have had a little influence on punk rock, like, you know, the Damned with Plan 9, Channel 7.
But stuff played on television all the time.
And like, and it's one of those things where, like, you know, I always thought of like the cult of Ed Wood built on TV. But a lot of people say like, oh, you know, it kind of happened with the Golden Turkey Awards. That's where a lot of people discovered it. But all these
not
bands really. Were really like pushing that stuff.
Yeah, because Plan 9 was a regular staple of television in this as early as like 1962.
That's
it was constantly aired on TV.
And Ed Wood didn't see a penny of it.
Right. Nope. He didn't see a dime. It, you know, all these guys got hosed over, but no, a lot back in the 60s and 70s, and I've said this before on the show, you had a UHF channel that was not affiliated with the major networks, and all they could air were cheap movies, which included a lot of horror films or monster movies. And that's where a lot of people saw their first Godzillas, their first Gamoras, their first Mexican horror films. Santo was dubbed as Samson, and it was Samson versus the Vampire Women, or Samson and the Black Chasing. You would get your Ed Wood films as well.
If you guys want a sort of idea what it would have been like to have UHF channels back then, go to Roku and get channels like Driving Classics and watch the films on there.
Yes. Yes, nice. Exactly. That's the way they looked. Crappy pan and scan, faded, washed out. Yeah. And that's what you grew up watching if you had a UHF channel in the 70s and I guess the 1960s as well. Yeah.
So, Stuart, what do you give Walk Among Us?
4.
Wow.
Yeah.
John?
I give it a 7.
7? I give it an 8.
20 years ago, I'd have given it a 10, put it that way. But being exposed to their other stuff via the box set and all the releases that came afterwards, you know, it's my opinion of it's faded a bit.
All right, so next record, 1982, we've got Evil Live. This is the Misfits' first official live record. Same lineup, Danzig vocals, Doyle guitar, Jerry Only bass, Arthur Googie drums, and we have guest vocals from Henry Rollins on We Are 138.
Guest Annoyance by Henry Rollins on...
So it was released in it was recorded in 1981, but I don't think it came out till later. 82. Yeah, 82.
The cassette was widely available in the late 80s.
Yeah,
at record stores and stuff.
And so the full version that was released later has 20 Eyes, Night of the Living Dead, Astro Zombies, Horror Business, London Dungeon, Nike A Go-Go, Hate Breeders, Devil's Whorehouse, All Hell Breaks Loose, Horror Hotel, Ghouls Night Out, and We Are 138 with Henry Rollins. So, Stuart,
yes.
What do you think of Evil Live?
I don't like it. No, I'm just I do like it very much so.
It's a very raw recording.
It's about the rawest live recording you're probably ever going to hear in your life.
Yes, it's very
it's got tape piss.
It was one of those things where I wasn't sure if Stuart would like this one or not because of how raw it is. And I actually heard a bootleg that has even more songs on it from the same show.
Right.
And it had
the infamous Bobby Steele.
Yeah, I might have brought this up on the show.
A few weeks back.
Yeah.
But it was Danzig starts screaming like during Teenagers from Mars, which is not on here. He starts saying Bobby Steele is a fucking cunt. Like, yeah, you like the cunt. Like tonight, Bobby Steele fucking dies. And during instead of the lyrics, he starts yelling at Bobby Steele. who went on to start his own horror punk band, The Undead. So you like it, even though the production's pretty raw on it.
Yeah, I do. Just for because it's not one of those overly polished things like Rush is. You know, what's that one? All the World's is it Exit Stage Left and
Exit Stage Left, which Eddie Trunk is very proud to note that Geddy Lee agrees with him that album's not that good.
Yeah, but it's not overly polished like that, or say.
It's like a bootleg.
Basically, it just sounds like like John says, it sounds like there's tape hiss on there and all sorts of stuff. I really like it. I mean, I think I still have the vinyl of this sitting out in the garage. I'd have to check, but I really enjoyed the introduction to Astro Zombies is Danzig going, "This one's called fucking Astro Zombies."
But I love that he'll go like, "The next person who does that fucking dies."
Oh, in a horror business. Yeah.
So ratings for Evil Live, Stu.
8.
8.
Yeah.
John.
It's a 6.
6. I give it.
I'm not a huge fan of live albums, and very few live rock albums are very good. This reminds me that Kiss Alive was pretty much created in the studio.
Oh, totally. Yeah, like a lot of live records are done totally different. I mean, they're done after the fact. But I give this one an 8, and the reason I give it an 8 is because I was like at the gym listening to this today, and I was like I was getting to the point where I was like, "Open this fucking bit," like out in public. Because I was having so much fun listening to it. Like,
walking around going, "Get off the treadmill, motherfucker."
I mean, I was like, I was getting like aggressive. Like, it was one of those things where I was on the rowing machine and I was like, "I'm glad I'm on here," because I'd be like walking around like going, "Argh!"
You know what you should have done is that guy, you go up to that guy and you want the treadmill, and he goes, "Just one more minute, man." You said, "One more fucking minute, you asshole, and you die."
Exactly. But it was just like I was getting like really pumped listening to it while I was working out, and I was like, "God, I love like a good live, like aggressive, like recording." For some reason, that just gets my blood up. Like, I love that shit. And Evil Lives, it sounds like shit, but in a way that's totally punk rock and totally cool, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm that way at the gym when I listen to Nat King Cole. I don't know what the hell it is.
That's because you're black at your heart.
Yes, in my heart. Yeah. On the inside.
John,
but
spent so much time in Mississippi, you know.
Doing a circuit training to Count Basie. Yeah.
So, next record, the final record the Misfits put out while they were together. Actually, I think it came out after they broke up. Earth AD.
No, they hadn't broken up. This is basically the death knell for them.
Yeah, this was like when they broke up.
Yeah.
It has a great album cover. But 1983, produced by the Misfits and Spot, and Black Flag fans will know Spot as Black Flag's producer.
As Henry Rollins' best friend as well.
Yes.
Not fond of each other.
Spot fucking hated Henry. He said he ruined the band.
Yeah.
But you have Danzig on vocals, Doyle on guitars, Jerry Only on bass, and Robo on drums, who is people will know from
Black Flag.
People will know him from Black Flag, and I saw him play with – and he played with the Jerry Only – one of the Jerry Only versions of the Misfits. And Arthur Googie played drums on Die Die My Darling, so a little Googie in there. But yeah, so Earth 80 – this is a much more aggressive album. It's much more metal. It's much more hardcore.
It's more hardcore than I'd say anything.
Yeah, it's more of a hardcore punk record. And in fact, some of the songs on it, like Blood Feast, were meant for Danzig's new band, Samhain, or Samhain if you're a purist. But, if you're Glenn Danzig, but essentially, but
Samhain.
It's called Samhain. Like, I remember, what was it? This girl was interviewing Danzig on Danzig 777. It looks like I Lucifer,
yeah.
Yeah, and this girl was like, so your new album, I Lucifer, and he goes, it's E Lucifer.
That's when she got up and punched him out of the
Yeah, exactly. It was like one of those things. I was like, this is why you're single. But
that's not why he's single.
Yeah. Oh well, it's because him and Henry are gay lovers, as detailed in the comic book Henry and
allegedly.
I got some inside dirt on some of that. I can't allow it on the podcast. So.
Oh well, listeners can read into that what they will.
Yeah.
Hang on, John. There's a perfect paywall right there.
Right. And let me give the track listing. You have Earth AD, Queen Wasp, Devil Lock, Death Comes Ripping, Green Hell, Wolf's Blood, Demonomania. But he says like Demonomania like in the song. So
yeah, let's Samhain and Samhain.
Yeah, Samhain, Samhain, whatever. Tomato.
Samhain.
Blood Feast and Hellhound. But like some of the songs were meant for Samhain or Samhain or whatever the fuck you want to call it. And it kind of shows.
Oh, Blood Feast does. Blood Feast is the absolute sore thumb of this album, and it's my favorite as well by a mile. It's
really good.
Yeah. When I was listening to it the other night, I'm going, I mean, of course I heard it, I'm going, shit, this sounds like a song that could have been on Sam Haynes' Initium album. And yeah, and then when you mention that, obviously, because it sticks out like an absolute sore thumb. But
yeah, it does.
And it's the longest song on the album at 2:29.
Yeah, it's really slow. The other songs are really fast and violent. Like they sound like gore fests.
This whole album is a disgrace. It runs under 15 minutes for an album.
Yeah, it does. You get through it so fast. Like I got on the rowing machine today at the gym, and I was like, I'm gonna listen to Earth AD.
Yeah.
And you know, I was like, it's not gonna take me that long. Like I'll be done when
this is a lunch break album.
You do your Tabata.
Yeah.
You have to do Tabata cardio to that.
Yes.
You can basically brew up some coffee from start to finish. You've listened to all of Earth AD.
Exactly. It's such a fast record. Like, it just goes by like a snap of a finger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Snap of a neck. Like, you know, the other Misfits records feel like monster movies. This one feels more like a gore fest.
Yeah.
You know?
Jerry Only said it was inspired by Ace of Spades' Motorhead album that was out at the time. And that's when they got the idea to play fast like that.
Play super fast, and like the lyrics are like much more violent. Like it's just like
yeah, they were trying. They said they were trying to outdo Motorhead's.
Sounds more like Dead Kennedys to me, without all the social leftist bullshit in there.
Yeah, that's what all the California stuff.
Corporations.
Yeah, corporations. Football jocks.
But also another track I enjoy on this quite a lot is Queen Wasp. Probably my two favorites, that and Blood Feast.
I love Wolf's Blood because it's so goofy. It's like some from the point of view of a werewolf.
Oh, and Hellhound as well. What's the lyrics to Hellhound? Yeah. Like, that doggy's going to rip your face off? Yep. What is this stupid
lyrics? Doggy will rip your face off!
I like Green Hell a lot just because it's like, here in this maze, like a genie of death. Touch it, see it. Green Hell!
What the hell was a genie of death. Is that like I dream of genie?
it's like if Robin Williams was on drugs. Wait a second.
You're in this place with a rope around your neck.
Yeah, but it's like a thrasher. It's like, I love that song.
The thing that struck me is this album was out in 83. Metallica covered this only 4 years later in 87.
Yep. They were big fans.
Yeah, it seemed like the song had been out for 10 years or so, but it was only...
Like, I think a Cliff Burton was wearing Misfits t-shirts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, way before they became, you know, the in-band source of it.
Yeah.
Have you guys noticed that there's actually a lot of people wearing Misfits t-shirts as well, like they do? Not so much the extent of the Ramones, because that's just blown out to an epidemic.
Yeah, but it's yeah, Misfits have gotten to... Not to that level, but...
I actually saw people wearing Misfits shirts long before I saw people wearing Ramones shirts.
I did too.
Oh,
like
really?
I
heard about the Misfits.
I'm talking early 90s, yeah.
I heard about the Misfits before I heard of the Ramones. I didn't hear about the Ramones till like my junior year of high school. Mm. Misfits, I knew about them like freshman year.
Yeah. Best one I ever saw was when I was at a flea market with my brother and some mates back in the mid-90s. There was this old-ass Asian lady, had to be like in her early 70s, wearing a Dick Kennedy's Holiday in Cambodia t-shirt. Like, does she even know what she's wearing?
Yes, of course.
It's just the figure of Pol Pot's on the front. You know, it's like, well, yeah, okay, whatever. But, yeah.
So, Stuart, what do you give Earth AD?
And this is tough. Okay, sound-wise as well, I got to say, this is pretty horrible. It's all treble, this thing.
Yeah, they recorded it in like a day. Like it
yeah,
was,
yeah it pretty much shows. Like a 5, I'd say.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I mean... I'll probably give it. I'll give it a 7. Actually, I mean, there's some factors against it. It's short. It's really freaking short.
I don't mind an album being short though. Like I kind of like a quick like bam, like you know.
Yeah, but if you're laying down like, you know, $12-15 this thing, you want to get your money's worth. But
well,
then again,
I get you.
But that then it comes back. You can do the same lay down at $12-15, whatever it is, for an album and get something that's going to run for you know. 90 minutes, you know, Book of Souls, and be bored to death with it. So, yeah, you know, it's a double-edged sword. But for those of you out there, this is the track listing that Hunter gave out was actually for the original one. There is a CD version out there with 3 extra tracks, which is the Die Die My Darling single.
Oh yeah, it's got Die Die My Darling and We Bite.
And that studio of Mummy, Can I Go Out and Kill Tonight?
Which, Die Die My Darling is a classic, of course.
It's a fantastic track. And We Bite I like as well. You know, Bite really should have been on the album because it's like, you know.
And that version's 21 minutes.
But I'll give it a 7. I mean, sound-wise, not great. Sounds much better than Walk Among Us. Yeah, the songs, yeah, Blood Feast, definitely. And Queen Wasp, my favourites. But I do like a lot of others on there, like Green Hell, Death Comes Ripping.
There's really no songs I dislike on it. Like it's pretty much like I like Earth AD.
On Earth as it is in Hell. Demonomania is like just pretty stupid for me. It's like brain.
It's pretty stupid,
it's
but
like,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah. John, what do you give it?
I give it a 7. It's stupid as hell and shitty, but I love it.
I'm on the page with you fellers. I give it a 7. Like I was like. I was enjoying it when I was listening to it today. If you had asked me before I listened to it today, I probably would have given it a 6. But when I listened to it today, I was thinking, no, this is a 7. This is solid.
Yeah. As my old boss would say, good, dumb fun.
Yeah.
John.
Sounds like the Ramones.
It sounds like the Ramones.
John,
everything
what's
else
going on?
To?
This album's already finished. What was that, like 15 minutes?
Wow, that was quick.
Okay, so the Misfits broke up after that. Yeah. But we got a compilation record, kind of, in 1985 called Legacy of Brutality. This is the last one we're going to cover. I want to talk a bit about the other shit they've done, but we're not going to go into it. It's called Legacy of Brutality. I'm not going to, you know, the players on it, it's mostly Glenn Danzig. He, like, overdubbed and re-recorded a lot of stuff on it. But the only person on there who's not on the other records we've mentioned is Joey Image, who's on Who Killed Marilyn and Where Eagles Dare, tracks 9 and 10. But so the track listing is Static Age, TV Casualty, Hybrid Moments, Spinal Remains, Come Back, Some Kind of Hate, Theme for a Jackal, Angel Fuck, Who Killed Marilyn, Where Eagles Dare, She, Halloween, and American Nightmare. And a lot of these songs are from Static Age.
Yeah.
So this probably would have been the first place a lot of people heard them.
That's where the overlap comes in, folks, where we warned you about
early on. Yeah.
It's like, dude, you just said Static Age before.
But like Danzig re-recorded a lot of the instrumentation. And if you like open the record, like when I bought it on CD, like it just had pictures of Danzig in there. There were no other pictures of anybody else. So, Stuart, what do you think of Legacy of Brutality?
Love it. A lot of overlap. But it makes up for American Nightmare, which is absolutely one of my favorite Misfits songs. Which, I never sort of understood why it was never sort of released on one of the other albums. It could have fit on Walk Among Us easily, I think.
Yeah, like that one in Who Killed Marilyn. Like after Angel Fuck, you get tracks 9 through 13 are songs that don't feel altered. Like, because you're kind of, if you've listened to Static Age, you can kind of hear that Danzig's kind of played around with tracks 1 through 8, which are all from that record.
Yeah.
And then after that, you kind of get sort of something that's, you know, these are old cuts. And Who Killed Marilyn, that's definitely like an old version. American Nightmare is definitely an old version, you know. And you know, these are all ones that probably would have been released as like 7 inches through his Plan 9 records or whatever.
Yeah, for sure.
John, what do you think?
I liked it more 20 something years ago when I heard this, basically the mix, the different mixes of that stuff later on. My opinion lessened, just like some of the other ones. But I give it like an 8. It's a nostalgic favorite. I played it to death when I bought it on CD in 1990. Mm. So
okay, like, because yeah. With me, I had heard most of these beforehand, except American Nightmare and
right.
Who Killed Marilyn. So for me, this album was kind of redundant, and frankly, I like the production and mix on it less than Static Age.
Yeah, it's
well, it's I want to note, and I think I may have mentioned this on the last show, is it the box set version is a different mix.
Okay.
Like, it restores the Jerry Only guitar and the stuff that Danzig had been redubbing. Because there was a settlement and they've been suing each other for years.
Oh, good yeah. God, yeah.
And the box set was a result of the settlement, and Jerry Only's work was restored and probably some other instrumentation that Danzig had redubbed.
Yeah, because it's a very, like, it feels like Danzig, because they kind of wrote Bobby Steele out of history a little bit by not releasing 12 Hits from Hell. Legacy of Brutality feels like an effort to write the other band members out of history a little bit.
Right.
And this is probably one of the ones I listen to the least, and I'd give it a 5. Because I like stuff like American Nightmare and Who Killed Marilyn and all that. But I listen the tracks 1 through 8, I listen to the Static Age versions always.
Yeah.
You know.
No, yeah. Static Age is a better way to listen to it, without a doubt. I wouldn't even argue that. I'm just saying it's a nostalgic pick. It's basically, for a while, this is the only way to hear these tunes.
Oh, totally. And so I understand like why Gavin McInnes does the Vice Do's and Don'ts. He snaps a picture of Jerry Only and he says, like, dude, why are you dressing like that? Legacy of Brutality was like 20 years ago. Like, I'm like, why are you referencing Legacy of Brutality? Jerry's hardly on that. But then I'm like, well, that's because that's how he heard the Misfits. You know?
Right, right. And like I said, the box set version is a different mix and from the Caroline CD, which I was listening to for years. But I couldn't imagine anybody actually buying the standalone CD version of this these days.
I did just as a completist when I became like a super fan. But it was one I listened to. I listened to it to pop on American Nightmare and Who Killed Marilyn. Could it have been the Kennedys?
Yeah. I didn't like the way those songs sounded compared to Walk Among Us, but
yeah,
my opinion on them has evolved over the years on certain tunes. American Nightmare is a great tune.
It is. That's definitely Danzig going full Elvis.
with that, with the vocals.
Again, and not hiding from it like he usually tries to do.
That's the thing, like tracks like American Nightmare and In the Doorway, they're so obscure in the sort of, you know, catalogue of Misfit songs, unlike I Turned to a Martian or Night of the Living Dead, which is so well known. That they're pretty much some of the best songs they've done as well. But there's a track on disc 3 of the box set, which I've never seen anywhere else, called Spook City USA.
Yeah, that's the only place you can get it.
And it's like, this is a fucking cool song. It really is. It's just, where is it? Why was it buried and, you know, never re-recorded?
They have strange ideas. I think it's because Jerry Only and Danzig can never agree on anything. And they're just strange ideas about what's best for the band's legacy and their image and,
They agreed on that cash cow of a reunion, didn't they?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I'm sure they're getting paid big money for that.
Oh, for sure.
Because they were literally the holy grail of punk reunions, the one that nobody thought would happen.
Yeah, like, because Danzig, like we said, they've been suing each other, and, you know, they kind of came to an agreement where Jerry and Doyle, who now Doyle tours with Danzig, but Jerry and Doyle could tour as the Misfits. They could record as the Misfits. They had to split the merch with Danzig.
Yeah.
You know, Danzig was getting a cut of their stuff. So, like, they eventually came, like, so, like, after the band broke up, Jerry and Doyle went to work at their dad's machine shop.
Weren't they building guitars as well on the side? Or was it
They built guitars. They built the stage props. They built a lot of I think they built some of the crazier Road Warrior type costumes they were wearing at one point.
Yeah.
Like, they built a lot of I think Jerry's dad bankrolled the band.
Yeah, he did.
Quite a bit.
But,
so they could tour. So,
but we would be remiss, before I lose my train of thought and not bring it up, we would be remiss that in 1986, do anybody remember the band that Jerry and Doyle had together?
Christ the Conqueror.
Christ the Conqueror. Yeah.
Yeah, they tried to start a Christian heavy metal band.
Along the lines of, sound wise, of Iron Maiden, and it ain't good.
I haven't listened to it.
You haven't heard it?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But I have it.
They got the rights together, they recruited Dr. Chud on drums, and then they got Michael Graves, and they relaunched the Misfits, and they did a few albums with Michael Graves on vocals.
Yep.
And I remember reading when American Psycho came out. I remember, not when it came out, but I remember reading later the Rolling Stone review for American Psycho.
Yeah.
And this is how fucking lazy and shitty Rolling Stone is. They said, Michael Graves does his best Danzig impersonation. I was thinking, he sounds nothing like him.
No, he wasn't even trying to do his voice. He sounded like Joey Ramone.
If anything, he was trying to be as far removed from Danzig as anybody. So. Yeah.
The only similarity you could call up is that they share the affinity for gang vocals. Like,
Rolling Stone has always sucked. They've always had bad reviews. The critics don't listen to the music.
It was like the guy never listened to the album. That's the only way you could.
No, he didn't. He didn't. He didn't listen to it at all. He just wrote it based on the press release.
It's a good album, though.
Yeah, I love it. I'm sorry, but the Michael Graves stuff, it doesn't sound anything like the Danzig stuff.
No, they were a different band. They had restored that, doing all the vocals and the B-movie stuff, but they were totally going in a different direction. Nothing like what Danzig.
Yeah, it's 90s punk. Like, Daniel Ray produced American Psycho, who worked with the Ramones. He produced, like, you know, Adios Amigos, Brain Drain, and a lot of stuff like that. And they did Famous Monsters. Those are the two albums they did with Michael Graves. And I know Stuart hates that record. I like it.
I think it's crap.
that album is hilarious.
I love that record.
It's so bad. I mean, when you get to one of the last tracks, Fiend Club, you just want to throw the fucking disc out the window.
Fiend Club's not a good song. I will give you that.
it's like a Manowar sing-along. I despise Manowar. I think they're fucking garbage.
By the way, they're going on their farewell tour, so you should be excited. But no, I love the Michael Graves stuff. And, you know, even though it doesn't sound like the Danzig stuff at all. It's 90s horror punk is what it is. It's like if you took Green Day or Blink-182 or one of those bands
and put a horror punk spin on it. That's what you get.
That'll better name. I mean,
well, yeah, they're heavier too. Like
way
they're
way heavier,
much heavier. But then Jerry kind of became the front man of the band. They sort of just became a legacy.
I saw their first show with Jerry Only as the front man because Michael Graves quit in the middle of a tour.
He did. One
of the first shows was Denver on the tour. They didn't stop touring. So
and Doyle quit soon after.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was a little worried when we went, but it was actually pretty fun. It's almost like Jerry Only had been planning to lose the singer eventually. Like I think he had a backup plan. Like he'd been taking singing lessons.
Well, he dabbled with the lead vocal sing on, there was a version of, the Bobby Boris Pickett song, Monster Mash. Now, the Misfits, the second incarnation of the Misfits, record the Monster Mash, the Bobby Pickett song, with Michael Graves, but there was a single version that came out first with Jerry Only on vocals. And actually, I've got to say, the Jerry Only version is the one I prefer more.
It is better.
Now, is that available on the Cuts from the Crypt?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Oh, well, it's on Cuts from the Crypt. One version's on Cuts from the Crypt. The other one's on Project 1950, I think.
Project 1950 is another re-record with Jerry Only. There is a version that came out as a single, which...
And a video
clip out of it out there, which is my one of choice of that version of Monster Mash with Jerry Only. But
Doyle went on to he started his like he at first it was called Gorgeous Frankenstein with his wife who was the pro wrestler,
Gorgeous
his ex-wife.
George. Yeah.
Gorgeous George.
Yes, she had been with Randy Savage. She was Randy Savage's girlfriend.
But they broke up, and Gorgeous, and now he's just Doyle, and his girlfriend now is the chick who's an arch enemy now, Alyssa White Glutes.
Really?
Yeah, they're a couple. They were a couple before she got the arch enemy gig. But he now tours with Danzig, and they do Misfit sets together. So it was like Doyle left Jerry for Danzig, so it's almost like a Family Feud thing.
Yeah, I caught a Danzig show about 7 years ago, 8 years ago, and Doyle was there and came out and did a couple of Misfit songs with Danzig at the end for an encore.
Yeah. Yeah. So he kinda left his although Jerry was I heard an interview with Jamie Josta did with him and he was like, "Oh yeah, everything's good with Doyle, you know, we're fine, you know." And he's like smacking gum the whole time.
Yeah.
But Project 1950s.
And then there's Project 1950, which is all just
that's right.
Which is all just 50s covers.
Which is another Misfits epic album of 24 minutes. And, I mean, I like it. Don't get me wrong. It's dumb. It's really dumb. Like This Magic Moment, the one that opens up the album, I think is fantastic. And there's some tracks in there that Jerry Only can tackle as a vocalist, and there's some that he clearly can't tackle. Like his version of Runaway, I'm sorry, Del Shannon is a fucking musical god. Please, no one else touch that song, and especially Jerry Only.
I liked Diana a lot.
Yeah.
In a version.
Oh, actually, in the version of Donna they do, the terrible Richie Valens one, the one they did with the Misfits was good.
But, and then the Misfits, and then Jerry's version of the Misfits made the worst record, one of the worst records of all time, The Devil's Reign.
Oh, it's...
It's
fucking hideous.
It just showed me, okay, the Michael Graves era, Michael was writing the songs. Okay, good to know.
Yeah.
I listened to Michael Graves' newest album that came out this year, When Worlds Collide, and I was listening to it, and I was like, yeah, this is the guy that wrote those records.
Yeah.
You know?
All he's done on this... he's been guilty of it before. He's really just taken fucking horror titles, sci-fi titles.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, they surely did it on American Psycho and Famous Monsters, but this one's like... You know,
but the
Land
thing
of
is,
the
Michael
Dead.
Graves wrote good songs. Like he was a good songwriter. Like I just listened to his latest solo record, and it's not as good as those records. But I'm still like, this is the guy that wrote that. I listened to Devil's Reign, and I'm like, no,
it's so bad. I will say it's worse than Famous Monsters for sure.
Oh, it's. I'd give it like a two. You know, like
oh yeah, that, yeah, that's being generous.
Yeah.
It's not good.
No. And also, they just released a new single called Friday the 13th for Misfits with Jerry Only, and it's... Oh, it's horrible. It's so bad.
That sounds lousy.
It's, yeah, another horror. Let's take a horror title, Friday the 13th. Right. Let's put a song behind it and... Not good. What was a split EP they did with that Japanese punk band?
Oh, Balzac.
Balzac, yeah. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah, they covered a Misfits covered a Balzac song, and Balzac is obviously like a Misfits worshipping Japanese band.
Sure.
Yeah. I saw them live at the Fiend Fest.
No, oh, how were they?
Yeah, they were okay.
Yeah, they
cooler image more than the music, really.
Didn't you guys
of Japanese guys with double locks, you know?
Do you guys remember a Japanese metal band from the 90s called Zenigiva?
No.
I saw them. Fuck, how good. Like, really super
I only
heavy.
Know about Loudness and the Radioactive Cats from the 80s. That's all I really know.
Oh, God, I saw Shonen Knife as well. That was just like horrible.
Oh, yeah, Shonen Knife, yeah.
I nearly walked out when I was singing Banana Chips. I'm like, what is this shit?
Really? I saw Melt Banana open for Napalm Death in the Melvins recently. That was pretty great.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. But yeah, like we said, once you get to Devil's Reign, like just walk
yeah, it's,
away.
It,
seriously,
Devil's Reign, the bottom of the barrel. It's pretty fucking terrible.
Don't even bother.
No, don't
buy it. Don't listen to it. Don't.
You're better off with a lullaby version of Misfits song.
Yeah, get the children's
the stuff for your baby. You know, is probably better than Devil's Reign. It's pretty awful.
Yeah.
It's like just falling into your own hype and putting out something just to put out something to sell at the shows, I think.
I got to say this as well, and I might cop some shit for it, but Jerry Only's Devil Lock now looks disgraceful. It's just
he doesn't have any hair.
Is it stuck on? Yeah.
It's a glue on.
You could tell his hair was going years ago.
Yeah.
And it's like, it just got worse every time I saw. I went to see every Misfits show for like several years straight, and then I just had enough, and then I was done. When it was Dez Kadena and Marky Ramon, and they were a three-piece, and they sounded so bad the last time I saw them. It was like, shit, the Dam blew them off the stage.
Well, if you were...
Yeah, and we should mention that the Damned, at one point the Misfits tried to get Dave Vanian to be their lead vocalist.
He almost did it, but the contract said you have to lift weights every day. And Dave Vanian's like, no.
Dave Vanian's a chubby British guy. He's like, no.
Yeah, he seriously considered it. Like, he was going to do it. And then when he saw that in the contract, he was like, no thanks. He goes, Jerry, you're a nice guy, but no thanks.
One can only wonder what it would have sounded like with Dave Vanian, because he's a great singer as well.
I fucking love Vanian. Like, my pick for Rock Month was almost the Damned.
Yeah, almost.
Yeah.
Nearly got there.
Maybe next year, you know.
Well, we should be thankful. My pick was nearly Sam Hain. A bit too obscure for people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, mine probably is too obscure.
Sorry.
Solwyn.
So, you gotta wonder how much Danzig really takes that shit seriously in his real time, you know?
His recent appearance on Portlandia seems to be an effort to make him seem more.
I haven't seen that yet.
I haven't seen it either.
It's fucking hilarious.
Is that on Netflix right now?
I watched the clips online, but he's hysterical on it.
Was he really on Aqua Teen Hunger Force as well?
Yes, he was.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
He was on Aqua Teen Hunger Force, and the animators were talking about how he would constantly say, make me taller, make me taller, make me taller,
make me taller. Make me taller, make me taller.
And, yeah, he looks really tall in the show, and he's not that tall.
No, he's not. I've seen him. Last time I saw him at a live show, it was like 8 years ago. He looked like Michael Chiklis with like a crazy hair weave.
Yeah. I remember he got in a fight with security at the show I saw him at. He jumped off the stage and his necklace was ripped off of him. And his shirt was torn. It was pretty amazing. And he goes, what is this bullshit? Is this how y'all treat each other here? I love you a lot more if you get home alive.
So he's doing a Paul Stanley.
Yeah, really.
It almost felt planned. Like,
yeah, it probably was. A lot more of that stuff is scripted than most people realize.
Although he was like throwing shit at his road crew because he was pissed at the stage setup.
Uh-huh. Have any of you guys seen the Danzig home videos he released? Not the music clips, the actual home videos.
Talking about like the one where he talks about his bookshelf.
Yeah, and he talks about, like, and I'm going like, to read a passage from the lost verses of the Bible.
This is a Apocrypha, and
that was a VHS release from the early 90s.
I've got
on his album.
This is the one where Jesus makes a kid drop dead.
Yeah,
I know a lot more about the Bible than a lot of these Christians.
I'll read this passage to you with my shirt off.
This is about werewolves.
This werewolf runs out. It's got a baby's veins in its mouth.
Some of his videos are ridiculous. Like Killer Wolf is just stupid. I mean, like I said, I love Danzig too. It's my favorite of his albums.
Oh, Dirty Black Summer is embarrassing. He's like the Dirty Black Summer.
That's probably my favorite Danzig song. I will say,
it's a great song. The videos and It's Coming Down video is embarrassing too.
He did do one good metal video. The God's Kill or whatever.
The God's Kill, right.
Yeah, the guy, like, it's just, it's got the girl with the black hair and stuff.
By the way, I heard Erie Vaughn. I think it was Erie Vaughn who said that Danzig, like, he said the first record could have been big, but then Danzig had to make a music video where he's like cutting open and sacrificing a girl, and he goes, that just fucked it up for us.
He said
that they could have been a lot bigger if he didn't make such fucking stupid videos where he was like,
it's true. It's really true, because when they hit it big with Mother, with that live EP,
yeah,
and it was just a live video in color with a compilation of live clips, and it was a hit on MTV. Yeah. And he could have been that big if he hadn't made these stupid videos.
Yeah, like Erie Vaughn was like, Mother would have been a hit with the first record if he hadn't made such a piece of shit video for it. Yeah.
The video for that, the original track, is just stupid.
Oh, it's dumb. It's dumb as shit. In fact, it's like...
The worst one is She Rides.
Oh, that's just stupid. That looks like he had a strip. She Rides.
And my favorite Danzig video is the... Hips Don't Lie Shakira collaboration. Y'all seen that?
That is great.
Did you see Beavis and Buddy used to really make fun of Danzig?
My favorite is when Danzig's doing that dumb movie does where he like whips the microphone around and Butthead goes, settle down, Danzig.
Yeah, I know. And then one that had Danzig on the video for Can't Speak, and he goes, like, Danzig's there and he's got a little sand around him. He's going, and Buddy goes, that must be all that protein powder that he takes in the gym.
I'm sorry, but like Beavis and Butthead video commentaries are the best.
Oh, they were phenomenal. They make me laugh so hard.
That Crowbar video, they go, he said he gave his heart and soul to that chick. That's like 50 pounds of beef.
Well, my favorite Danzig clip was when he was on Red Eye.
That was the best!
Where Greg Gutfeld was like, have you ever thought of doing a horror concept album? And he goes, yeah, if I did one, it'd have to be about the Obama administration. And they were all shocked.
Yeah, they were like, whoa.
Yeah.
Is he conservative, Danzig?
Yeah.
Yeah, he is.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
So is Michael Graves. Michael Graves.
Wow.
So is Jerry Only.
Yeah. They're all big.
Jeez, I did not know that.
Yeah. Yeah,
no, Danzig's, it was funny when he said it'd be about the Obama administration. He almost said it like, oh, shit.
I've got to watch it after we finish.
and then as soon as I went, whoa, he started laughing, or he's like grinning. He's doing the Danzig grin.
Danzig said it like he was like, oh, shit. Oh, shit.
He's really come out against Obama in interviews and stuff.
Yeah, he has.
And his fans.
That's
fans
what punk rockers should do. God damn it!
Yeah, exactly. They're supposed to say screw politics and screw the hell with the president.
And to think him and Henry Rollins are friends.
Yeah, I know. Imagine that.
Political makes, views. Makes, you know,
it's me. Friends.
Yeah. benefits.
Have you met Henry and Glenn forever?
Yeah.
I love the quote on the back of the Henry and Glenn Forever book. It says, has Glenn seen this? Trust me, he would not be amused. Henry.
Trust me.
So That's the Misfits, everybody. If you haven't listened to the Misfits, go fucking listen to the Misfits, because they're a band for people who like movies.
All right, so but where do we get people starting off? What's the jumping off point for this band?
I think
I'd say go by Static Age.
Static Age. Even if it, you know what, like even Collection 1 and 2 is not bad.
Yeah, I mean, Collection, my favorite tune is Return of the Fly. Which is just them reading off the poster.
Yeah.
Return the fly. It's got such a cool groove to it that it's impossible not to like, you know?
It's like the ultimate Monster Kid song. It's great.
And I don't know. I kind of got Collection 1, and I kind of say that's a good one to start with. But yeah, Static Age, perfect one to start with.
Yeah.
Next week, we'll be doing King's X.
Who?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we're going to do their first six records, which is Out of the Silent Planet, Gretchen Goes to Nebraska, Faith, Hope, and Love, King's X, Dogman, and Ear Candy.
Well, this is going to be quite something, because I've never heard any of this stuff. Yeah,
this is going to be the most interesting Rock Month episode ever, I dare say.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, this was kind of a risk. This is kind of a risk for me, because I was like, John and Stuart may fucking hate this shit, but I was like, King's X is a band I love that not many people know or listen to. And I wanted to do, and I did those because that was kind of their stab at success that didn't work. Everything after that's kind of like, okay, we know we're not going to make it anywhere. And those records are good too, but I kind of wanted to do their sort of run at fame.
At least downloaded episode ever, right?
Yeah, probably, but Stuart's like, Stuart, it's funny because Stuart's like, this is like with the Faith No More episode. I haven't listened to any of it. So,
true.
So, but we'll see. I'm very, this is going to be a very interesting episode, because one of my favorite bands, when I saw them live, they blew me off. They blew me away. They were so good. And
we're also going to do a bonus episode this month, where it's going to be just a 4-hour discussion on Sydney Youngblood's Passion, Grace, and Serious Bass. Did you guys remember that album?
No.
Oh, God, it was horrible. Used to be in every cutout bin across the planet. It was just ridiculous. It's all. Sydney Youngblood's Passion, Grace, and Serious Bass.
We should do a cutout bin episode where we talk about a great album we discovered in the cutout bin that nobody's realized exists.
Oh, that would be good.
Because everybody's got that who's ever bought a lot of CDs. Like, everybody's got that cutout bin special that was
whoa, that was good.
Yeah.
I think King's X is, I think all their albums are those. But anyway,
I remember when they were big for about 5 minutes. They were big for 5 minutes in 1990. King's
X. They were. There was a big push for them, and but we'll talk more about that next week.
Yeah,
they faded with other acts like the Urban Dance Squad and some of the other guys who used to get pushback.
Sydney Youngblood as well.
But they still play. They still play. They haven't put out an album since 2008. But they put out.
Remember the band from Atlanta, Seven Dust?
Oh yeah.
They're managed by JJ French from Twisted Sister.
They're still around. One of my friends was posting pictures on Facebook the other day saying, oh, saw Seven Dust again. Love seeing them.
I finally saw that Twisted Sister documentary as well.
I haven't watched it yet.
Oh, yeah, watched it. It's good. I would say, actually.
You're not convincing me.
Read Dee's book. Read Dee Snider's book instead, I'd say.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not going to take it.
Yeah.
I'm
not going to take it.
But I'm bummed. I think we can
everybody. I think we're done for the night.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll send a horse to your house.
Yay. Yeah. I'm gonna kick your fucking ass, Bobby.
I'll do it about the Obama administration.
Show me the cunt, Bobby.
God.
All right.
All right. Well, we'll say goodnight, boys, and should we get in a rousing rendition of We Are 138?
Yes.
I don't know. I have trouble remembering the lyrics. So.
They're rough. I mean,
they're about as tough as the Batman theme.
Yeah, really. All right, let's go. We are one.
No, 38.
That'll do.
We are 38. We are 138.
See, I did it.
No. We are 138.
That's one
of the great mysteries in life. What the fuck is 138? Apparently, nobody knows.
I think it's a science fiction reference. It's monster. Yeah. And I used to know, and I've completely forgotten.
When I was in college, I would put 138 after like my name on like username.
A lot of people did that. I remember being in a Misfits discussion group, and everybody had those names.
Ah, before we go, if you want everything Misfits, go to misfitscentral.com. The amount of information on there is ridiculous. The timeline stretches all the way back to even when Glenn Danzig bought his Hammond organ and everything. It's unbelievable. Misfitscentral.com. Go on there and just get all the news after you've listened to this. And started diving into the band.
Right on.
Can't recommend it enough. All right. Well, say goodnight, boys, and we'll see everyone next week with King's X. Christian rock, man.
Yeah, we're going from the darkness into the light.
Yes.
Adios. Hey, mahalo.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast. To leave feedback and show suggestions, email us at midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like our Midnight Movie Cowboys show page on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and feel free to leave us a review. Listen to us on Stitcher.com or the Stitcher Radio app. Want to help the show out? Visit MidnightMovieCowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate link. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Our personal links are on the right side of our homepage. See y'all next time.
I got one more question. I knew your lyrics, and you're obsessed with horror and assorted dark imagery. Would you ever do an album singing about, like, puppies and rainbows? Would that ever happen?
Yeah. No, maybe I'll do a real horror record and talk about the Obama administration.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. So many new fans.
I did not see that one coming.